Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Mr. Marius Ruart. Now, it is a freezing cold day across much of South Africa, so let's jump straight into it, shall we? And one of the big political questions that seems to be emerging from the government, the formation of the Government of National Unity, is what's going to happen to the ANC? It's clear that President Ramaphosa is in a bit of a weak position. He has managed, he's gone from being perhaps the strongest politician in the country with large popular support and relatively firm control over his political party to being a head of a coalition government with his longtime opposition opponents, and also having led the party into an election where it faced a significant drop in its vote share, going from 57% of the vote to about 40%. Normally, that spells the end of a politician's career, and indeed anyone associated with him often can go under as well. On that note, a British asset manager has suggested that while there may be some initial positives from the Government of National Unity, that it may get more complicated down the line. The asset manager company said that there's should Ramaphosa lose sufficient support within the ANC, he could be replaced to the next national conference of the ANC due towards the end of 2027. Now, who knows if Ramaphosa is going to stand? I don't think he will stand for a third term. That would be very risky. That didn't work out for Thabo Mbeki of the ANC. But he's very likely to push a candidate who he believes will carry on his way of doing things and sort of keep his influence strong in the party. And this column here, written by R.W. Johnson, suggests that that man may, in fact, be Ronald Lamola. And that seems to be who many people are suggesting might be the Ramaphosa candidate for leadership of the ANC. He would, of course, be much younger than a lot of recent leaders of the ANC. Zuma and Ramaphosa are quite old guys. Lamola is, I think, in his 40s or early 40s, even. So he would definitely be a new generation of ANC Youth League leader. He was originally Julius Malema's deputy in the ANC Youth League, but managed to kind of break away from the Zuma, sorry, the Malema faction of the ANC Youth League. So one way that one can look at the Government of National Unity as essentially Ramaphosa attempting to pay off as many political factions within the ANC while at the same time managing to form a government. That might suggest why the cabinets are so big, right? Is that Ramaphosa felt the need to ensure that as many people as possible within the ANC were given positions as deputy ministers or ministers so that he could count on their support for his faction at the next elective conference. Now, Marius, this is, I think, an interesting question about the future of where South Africa goes, because, of course, if Ramaphosa's faction loses control of the party of the ANC, it's very possible that they could break off the coalition of the DA and some of the other smaller parties and instead form something with MK or the EFF or some combination of those two and other and small parties. What do you make of Ramaphosa's chances? It's not common for a political leader who led his party to such a massive electoral disaster to retain significant influence within the party.
It seems he's still pretty influential in the ANC. It looks like mostly people are on his side. I think if there'd been something different, we wouldn't have seen him start a GNU with the DA being the major partner. And I think the fact that he has managed to do that has shown that his faction, or he's still pretty much in control of the ANC. I think what happened in Gauteng with Panyaza Lesufi shows that there's already pretty infighting in the party, and that might accelerate going into 2027. I'm pretty sure he won't stand. I mean, we all know what happened to Thabo Mbeki when he tried to stand for a third term. Even Jacob Zuma, when he his ex-wife and Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma was obviously his proxy candidate, and she lost to Ramaphosa in 2017, even though that was actually pretty close. Ramaphosa didn't beat her in a landslide. It was still pretty close election. But yeah, but I do think Ronald Lamola, I've said it before, I think the fact that he's been given the Durco cabinet post is quite significant. It's obviously quite in most countries around the world, the foreign minister post is normally given to quite a senior politician, somebody who's quite respected and so on. I think under Jacob Zuma was a bit different because it was Mayeti Nkwane Mashabane who had the post, and I don't think she really covered herself in glory when she was the foreign minister. But then Naledi Pandor had it under Cyril Ramaphosa. And whatever you can disagree with her politics and her stance on the Israel-Gaza war, but she's definitely somebody who has some gravitas and who I think is a decent administrator and did have respect of people within the party and so on. So I think the fact that Ron Lamola has got this post is quite significant. I do wonder if there's going to be some issues because by 2027, Khoza won't have been the head of the ANC for 20 years. So I wonder if causes in the ANC are going to think, you know, it's kind of our turn again. Ron Lamola, I think he's a Tsonga, so he also comes from quite a small ethnic group. President Ramaphosa is a Venda. So, and he's also from kind of the north of the country. He's from Mpumalanga, I think. And Cyril Ramaphosa is from, you know, I think his origins are in Limpopo, but he's from Joburg. So I wonder if, you know, people from the Eastern Cape might think, you know, more of the southern parts of the country, it's their turn again. And that's why I think somebody like Fikile Mbalula could maybe be pretty well placed to also have a go at trying to become president of the ANC in 2027.
Yeah, Fikile Mbalula also seems to be generally aligned with the sort of DA coalition faction of the ANC. He's made a lot of public statements kind of suggesting that the ANC needs to majorly change the direction it's been going in, and that it can't be too arrogant in its negotiations. So that's, I think that's also a possibility. Of course, the ANC is increasingly reliant on both Limpopo and the Eastern Cape as its sort of bedrocks of support. Within the Northwest, it's seen its support erode towards the EFF. Obviously, MK has smashed it in KZN. Mpumalanga, MK has made inroads there. The DA has made inroads in the Free State. And then basically everyone has taken a little something from the ANC in Gauteng. So, the Eastern Cape, I think the Eastern Cape may very well want to see someone from that part of the woods in charge of the ANC, considering that is increasingly the sort of center of gravity within the ANC, being their biggest province in many ways. So this is, I think, an interesting political battle going on within the ANC, but I suspect there'll also be similar things within, there's similar stakes within the DA. If the Government of National Unity fails to produce results that the DA can claim, and if it sees its support dropping in polls and its voters getting turned off by its participation in the Government of National Unity, its leadership will almost certainly face an internal challenge. And at the same time, if the DA manages to firmly secure its place in the Government of National Unity and make some serious successes out of it that see the party boosted into a better position, well, you'll see the opposite, that the DA's leadership will be definitely strengthened and Steenhuisen will remain secure in his position. So there's a lot to play for, both the way the parties are interacting within the Government of National Unity, but also within the parties themselves. What internal political dynamics are going on there, because the DA likewise will have factions that are both pro and anti-Government of National Unity for different reasons to the ANC, but it is something worth watching. And this is just a little bit of a tangent, but I really would like to see more sort of mainstream media reporting on the internal dynamics of the DA. The ANC gets a lot of investigation reporting of its internal conflicts. But with the DA playing an increasingly important role in South Africa's governance and politics, it would be, I think, a good idea for a lot of media people to start looking into that and seeing, you know, who aligns with who and who's championing what ideas, that kind of thing. Any final thoughts, Marius, before we move on?
No, but I think that's an important point, what you're saying about the internal dynamics of the DA. It's going to become more important as, especially if the GNU carries on. And leadership elections in the DA have been pretty tame affairs compared to in the ANC. They haven't been as close and so on. And there haven't been really that many internal challenges to leaders. I know they've been obviously in other posts for in the DA. There's the fighting gets quite intense. But I wonder if as the DA becomes more prominent at national level and is now part of national government, if we'll see that change. And as you say, if we'll see perhaps a challenge to John Steenhuisen, depending obviously what happens in the next couple of years.
No, definitely. All right, let's move on to our next story. And this is Eskom's enormous amount of money that it's been owed by many municipalities around the country. There are many poorer, more rural municipalities in South Africa, which you almost always, due to total mismanagement of funds, corruption, that sort of thing, are no longer able or willing to pay their ESCOM debts. And this has resulted in a massive headache for ESCOM. ESCOM says that municipalities owe it 78 billion rand. And according to Energy and Electricity Minister Ramakgopa, there is no possibility under the sun that the power utility will recover it. That was the phrase he used. He talked about the growing municipal debt, which is projected to hit 3.1 trillion rand by 2050, was essentially collapsing ESCOM. When municipalities do not pay, it also impacts ESCOM's ability to invest in its own infrastructure and ensure electricity supplies to Ramakgopa. He basically was saying that this is a threat to ESCOM's ability to continue to provide electricity to the country. We know that ESCOM is in a difficult financial position. And with the reduction in load shedding, it's seeing its fortunes improve a bit, but it's still not in a good place at all. So, Marius, I think there's something to be said here. There will be a temptation to sort of say, you know what, you know, let's see if we can find the money and just forgive some of these debts to these municipalities. They're completely bust. They're completely dysfunctional. We should write them off and then just focus on preventing this from happening in the future. But I'm very worried with that line of thought, because I think that's exactly how you just perpetuate this kind of thing forever, by removing the consequences of municipalities not paying. In fact, I think what Ramakgopa should be doing, because most of those municipalities that owe this money are ANC run, is that he should be going into his own party and putting pressure on his party structures to throw out non-performing mayors in municipalities that are just not paying their bills.
Yeah, I think this is ESCOM in quite a difficult position, and we're obviously going to see, I think, an acceleration of its decline, which we're already seeing anyway, I think, especially with people going to renewables and what have you. And I think in 10 years' time, ESCOM, if it's still around, will be pretty unrecognizable to people who, to people who are sitting in South Africa today. But I think that's also an issue, is that people who don't pay, there's very little pressure on them to pay. I know, for example, there's been quite a lot of reluctance within the ANC to, for example, go after people in Soweto who don't pay, because Soweto has always been such a stronghold of ANC support and is kind of a mythical, has a mythical role in ANC history and South African history. It's where Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu both spent long periods of their lives. Obviously, there's Nelson Mandela's, his museum there in Soweto in Vilakazi Street. So I think there's quite a reluctance to go for people who aren't paying. And I think that's, there's also, it's difficult politically to, try actually make people pay. So the ESCOM I think the electricity minister are in between a bit of a rock and a hard place. But you also can't magically, there's no magic money tree for this money. So if something's going to happen, something's got to give at some point.
No, that's exactly right. We're seeing more and more sort of political short-termist decisions coming home to, I think, roost for the ANC. And this is, considering that the ANC is increasingly going to be governing places that are more rural, with their power weakening so much in urban South Africa, they really do need to start sorting out some of these rural municipalities, or else they are going to find themselves without resources, without any effective power, just as a sort of kind of ineffective rural backwater. And I think that'll doom the party just as much as all the mismanagement of the cities has done. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. I hope that you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.